Ah, man. Okay. All right. Let's go ahead. Let's see about it. What do we have here? It's not official till the piano drops. Then it's official. All right. Father Teresa's wine cellar. Father Teresa, the greatest black atheist. Phoenix Kalita, the uppity negress, reading in the shade with Phoenix Kalita. Oh, and right there on the line, I wanted to see if Phoenix, if she was able to call in while at work to be on the program. So you are indeed there. All right. Yep, testing. Here we go. I guess I can set you up like that. Give me a microphone check.
Check, check, and check some more.
Okay, good. That's good stuff. I'll keep you right like that. All right. So let's get down to the get down. We did not play the pre-recorded trigger warning, so trigger warning. All right, this program heavy on the rape culture, heavy on violence across the board, politics. Though we get, I mean, politics is gone bad. Like that word, colloquialism has ruined that word. Now politics just means, do you watch Fox News or MSNBC? Like that's what politics means now. Like nothing to do with process, nothing to do with policy. No, just, so do you like Rachel Maddow or Sean Hannity? Pick one. Yeah, fuck that.
Right.
Yeah, shit's tacky now. So, Jesus Christ, the title of this episode, Code Switching, right? Let's read in the, and I put Let's Read in the Shade with William J. Jackson because I was joking around with Phoenix Kalita of, we were watching an episode of Desperate Housewives because we gangster. And a fucking, I think we're in what, season five, and in this household, just sort of binging it out on Hulu. And Bree Vandekamp, though she's Bree Hodge now in season five, married to Orson Hodge, and you know she's made a brand out of her name Vandekamp, and so she's like touring and selling her book and whatnot. And he was like, "Can't you be Bree Hodge?" And she was like, in a very polite suburban white woman way, she said, "No, nigga. Your name is ugly." Like, and I remember like I said his name was ugly. Like I leaned over to my fiance and I said his name's ugly, and then the character Bree right after that said, "It sounds like what a plunger does." It's like, yep. It
Yeah.
Hodge sounds like that, like a plunger, like it hodges in the toilet.
It
Yeah, so that's part of why I made that joke out of the episode title, Let's Read in the Shade with William J. Jackson. And then also because I didn't know if I'd be able to get Phoenix Kalita on the line because she's down at the, she's working with Jesus today, doing the Lord's work, if you will.
Working with Jesus.
Black Jesus. All right, so let's see about the see about. So I figure I might as well just jump right in on the colorism right now. I made a post in the social networks to see if folks wanted to get it on, but I don't see much action on that post. Actually, I see no action on that post at all. One person shared it. That's what happened. The homie Loco shared it. So, code switching. What I got, the homie Jan Loco, who I've been, you know, been down with Jan Loco since 2012, she sent me a link and said, "What do you think about this?" And it's a movie director. His name is Barry Jenkins, and he did a movie called Moonlight. And one of the things he said about it, he said there will be no code switching in this film, right? And oh, excuse me. So this piece goes about covering the film, and they say Barry Jenkins first attended the Telluride Film Festival in 2002. As a volunteer, he was cleaning toilets and serving popcorn. After working the festival every year since, Jenkins is now attending the festival as a filmmaker, something something bootstraps. Now the Moonlight, the movie, it made its world premiere at the 43rd annual Telluride Film Festival. Clearly this is like, you know, indie film business. And at the film festival, and it was directed and written by Jenkins, adapted from a play by Terrell McCraney. And it's called In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue. That's the name of the play. And so the movie, adapted from the play, is about a young boy discovering his sexuality and how his life experiences in Miami shape him as an adult. The story is told in three chapters of his life, from elementary school, high school, and as a young adult. Middle school is where the puberty happens. All right, the frames, John Horn spoke with Barry Jenkins about the process, putting the portion of his life on screen. So they put a couple of what they consider to be highlights from the interview in here. And he said, so Terrell and I both grew up in Miami. This is the filmmaker talk, the director talking. So Terrell and I both grew up in Miami in the same neighborhood, a neighborhood called Liberty City. It's what you would call the South Central of Miami. Both our moms went through this very horrible addiction in our childhoods. I did not know Terrell, but we grew up blocks from each other. We went to the same elementary school and same middle school. He wrote his play and gave it to a mutual acquaintance of ours, and the guy saw something in the play that reminded him of me. I'd never heard of Terrell. I did not know his work at that point, but I read it, and I just saw this very visceral story. It took me back to my childhood in a way that I wasn't ready to go back. Right away, I said, it's a film that I have to make because it is very personal. The world is small. The hood is small. So you got a playwriter and a film director out the same neighborhood and don't even know each other. All right. And how he said it's the South Central of Miami, basically saying, you know, niggas is going hard and motherfuckers is... And I'm sure when he said addiction, considering the time, he's probably talking about crack. And now continuing what they consider to be a highlight from the interview. Said, it is about intimacy between men, but I think more specifically, it is about intimacy between black men, which we don't see in arts very often. In this film, we see them from atypical depictions of black men. I think throughout the film, there are all these moments where in the black community, when black men greet each other and they dap. It's like a fancy handshake. We do very simple daps in this film, but in every story, when the characters first meet, they dap. There's just something that I felt was important about an audience seeing this spiritual transference between black men. Cutting the quote, I disagree with that. There's no spirit. It's no, like, it's physical human contact. You know, and it's also showing that you care enough to memorize this handshake to share with your friend that you don't share outside, right? That's what that is, not no spirit. Stop it. There's no spirit. Let's see. He said it's a spiritual transference between black men that is caring, because this is a movie full of characters that need to be cared for. Continues. He says, the most important audience for me with this film are the people who live where this film takes place. So there was no code switching in this film. Absolutely not. I think presenting the film here at Telluride is great, but that does not mean that the language of the film does not have fidelity to where it takes place. The movie opens with the most Miami local guy who's ever acted before. The first time my manager saw it, he was like, I think you might need subtitles. I was like, no, it's just Miami, bruh. It's just Miami. It was really hugely important. And I think that in order to really resonate with people who are like the characters in our film, It just had to be in their voice. Excuse me. You know, we do that with the podcast, too, with this program. You know, like, I know that, like, I look at the numbers. I look at folks that, like, comment and send us messages. You know, a significant portion of, like, you know, suburban, if you will, white women tune into this program. And I'm on here talking about Mark-ass busters and shit. And, you know, and, you know, at the time, they're probably just like, ah, yes, yes, you know what? That senator is a Mark-ass buster. I think he's right. And, you know, no code switching. You know, but then at the same, you know, we use a lot of language. We'll get into that after these interview highlights. He continues. It was really important for me to reflect how the world impacts us. I'm very much a person of nurture over nature. Cutting the quote again. I think balance, right? Balance, like nurture, you know, like fucking don't just throw your kid outside and be like, all right, go find something to eat and eat it so you don't starve. No, nurture as in like cook your child food. But if you give your child a fucking fork and there's corn on the plate, at some point they're going to put the fork down and eat with their fingers. Let nature be natural. All right, they're going to eat with their fucking fingers. It's just illogical for them to keep trying to get it up on the fork where it's just going to keep falling through the forkles. What the fuck are those things called? You know what I'm talking about. The forkles in the fork that make it a fork. All right.
Forkles?
Yes.
Forkles. Oh my god.
Yeah, like, you know how the fork has the four little daggers in it, typically? Some have three. Forkles. Alright, now.
Oh my god.
So he said, continuing with this quote, I'm very much a person of nurture over nature. When the world is not nurturing, it can really change a man. I wanted on screen the character to physically change, to become a different person from story to story. There is all this information in between the stories that I think when you see the character for the first time as we advance, you realize, okay, something has changed. So it was always, from the very beginning, my intention to cast different actors to play the same character. I was looking for the same feeling in all three guys. It wasn't important to me that they really look alike. There are some physical similarities. You can see them progress through time, but it was much more about the feeling. Over the course of the story, we get to the third story, and literally the character has fortified himself. He's built this really hard exterior, but you look in his eyes and you see that same little boy. It was really important to me. It was really a concrete way of humanizing the character to have an emotional through line as this guy becomes like a manly man on the exterior. Alright, so the hyper-masculine performance, if you will. I still haven't written about that. Also, from the interview, another highlight. I said, and this is on his emotional connection to the story, said it was definitely the most difficult thing for me in the process of taking the play and adapting it to the screen. I think trying to flesh out this character, who was sort of a composite of my mom and Terrell's mom, it took me to some very dark places. Both my mother and Terrell's mother went through raging, ravaging addiction over the course of our childhoods. I think Naomi Harris does a great job of depicting that in the film. I never thought I'd make a film this personal that has literal moments from my biography. I think it brought back so many emotions. This piece was really very visceral about where I'm from. It was also about where Terrell's from. And there's a whole set of things that Terrell went through growing up that I did not. But it was great as an ally working with empathy. I wasn't really bullied growing up, but Terrell was. I've always felt like it would be wonderful to tackle that issue. Oh, excuse me. You have any opinions yet? Phoenix Kalita of Reading in the Shade. Miss Colored. All right, she then went off to go do something black. She's also at work, though. Somebody may just come in the office and needs, like, Xeroxes. All right, continuing, another highlight from the interview said, it was one of those things because my, this is sharing the same childhood, excuse me, as Terrell McCraney. It was one of those things because Miami is a very small place. The neighborhood we grew up in is a small place. You're talking like 8 square blocks. That's our whole world. The fact that we didn't know each other, I don't know, it was just kind of shocking. But the beautiful thing about it was we went from that place. Terrell is now, at this point, Steppenwolf, Royal, Shakespeare. Excuse me. He's got plays at the Public, here at Telluride, and yet it all began in the same 8 square blocks. We were both kind of dumbfounded by it, to be honest. Then, when we started comparing our biographies, it was shocking. There's probably a version of the world where both our moms were in the same place doing very bad things. I absolutely believe that happened. It was just one of those things. And then, I guess he, self-identifies as an ally of the, LGBTQ community. And, he says, I approach this film as an ally. It is interesting. When the Supreme Court passed that bill, everybody went on Facebook and changed their profiles to a rainbow overlay. I thought that was interesting, but it wasn't active. As an ally, when I read this piece by Terrell and learning about him and how personal his identity and how much his sexuality was a part of his identity, I thought, as an ally, empathy can only get me so far. But I'm a visual storyteller, and the way for me to be politically active is to tell a story about this. I'm just glad that people who see themselves in the film like it, in the film, feel like it comes from a personal, organic, authentic place. And Moonlight is going to be out in theaters October 31st. Really, on Halloween, got to take the boy out that night. See if it's a day off of work. If it's a day off of work, maybe we can break the movie theater rule and go check out Moonlight. Is Phoenix Kalita, are you back from doing Colored Woman stuff? All right, Phoenix Kalita is still being black. So we are going to take a quick break for the LGBT news update. Seems kind of fitting, right? And when we swing it back, bring it back from that, then we'll, then we'll go ahead and riff about code switching for a second. I'll check the comment section on code switching, and then we'll get to the gosh darn news, the news, and the comment. You're in the Wine Cellar, winecellarmedia.com, socialdistance.wordpress.com, a critical analysis of justice.
What's up, out of town? Southern nigga down. I wish you would bring your motherfucking ass around here with that hip shit from your block. You fuck around and get your comb to your mama in a pine box. Cause we don't play that shit in Fifth Ward. We got killers and hustlers and players too, so nigga disregard what you're seeing on them Western movies. Cause yo, I ain't never rode a horse before.
It's now time for Big Gay News, brought to you by Lavender Media. This is Andy Lean in Minneapolis, and here are your headlines for Friday, September 9th, 2016.
This show is fucked up.
First up, big gay news from New York. Brooklyn witness testifies it was complete mayhem as Orthodox Jewish group attacked gay black man. The New York Daily News reports that a Brooklyn DJ who was giving his friends a ride home after a gig testified that he rescued a gay African-American man who was getting attacked by a group of Hasidic Jewish men. One of Jose Guzman's friends thought the group of almost 20 Hasidic Jewish men were jumping up and down on the sidewalk in celebration for Hanukkah during the December 1st, 2013 assault. It was completely mayhem, Guzman said. He approached the group and was stopped by a participant. The victim, Taj Patterson, grabbed Guzman's leg and said, "Help me," after one of the assailants threw his sneaker and another item onto the roof. Meyer Herskovic's DNA was found on the sneaker. If convicted, Herskovic faces up to 25 years in prison. Next up, the King of Norway delivered an epic speech backing LGBT people. The Huffington Post reports that the King of Norway is receiving global praise after delivering a heartfelt speech in support of the LGBT community and other minority groups. On September 1st, King Harald V urged Norway to embrace trust, solidarity, and generosity while speaking to more than 1,000 guests in the Palace Park in Oslo. He told the crowd, "Norwegians are girls who love girls, boys who love boys, and boys and girls who love each other. In other words, you are Norway, we are Norway." The rest of Harald's speech touched on the plight of refugees in Norway. On social media, many were quick to applaud the king's profound yet nuanced backing of LGBT rights specifically. Although Norway has always been ahead of the global game when it comes to LGBT rights, the king's championing of the cause just took it to a whole new level. Next up, billboards cause controversy in Waco's LGBT community. WFAA reports a pair of billboards are causing controversy in Waco's LGBT community. The billboards have been up for only a few days and read, "Ex-gays prove change is possible." The billboards are sponsored by Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays, a Virginia-based volunteer group. The group believes that people are not born gay and believe it is a choice and something that can be fixed. David Pickup, a scientific advisor to PFOX, said that he has nothing against people who identify as gay. He says he does not try to change people who do not want to change. However, he said that his practice helps people who tell him they are not happy and want counseling. Reverend Charlie Garrison of the Central Texas Metropolitan Community Church said that the billboards condemn people who are gay rather than support them. For our final story, Eat, Pray, Love author Elizabeth Gilbert announces lesbian relationship. The Toronto Star reports that in July, author Elizabeth Gilbert announced that her relationship with Brazilian businessman Jose Nunes was coming to an end. On Wednesday morning, Gilbert revealed the reason for the split. She has fallen in love with Rhea Elias, a woman who's been her best friend for years and who has recently been diagnosed with pancreatic and liver cancer. Gilbert wrote in a Facebook post, "I do not merely love Rhea, I am in love with Rhea, and I have no more time for denying that truth." She confirmed that her relationship with Elias was the reason for her separation from Nunes. In her Facebook post, she explained why she chose to go public with the news of her relationship, describing it as a need to live in truth and transparency. She ended her post by asking her readers for love. That's it for today. Thank you to Shane Luke and Linda Rains for compiling the stories. I'm Andy Lean in Minneapolis. Join us and tweet your take on today's stories on Twitter at the handle Big Gay News.
The news is a shit show these days, and we're here to give you a break from the white supremacist media bullshit by bringing you the shitty news so that you can feel less like shit, because you know the people discussing all the fucked up shit give a shit about you and the shitty situations you deal with every day. So shit. Pour yourself a glass and settle in for Father Teresa's Wine Cellar.
All right. So let's go ahead and get black. Feeny Loco, Phoenix Kalita, are you back from doing the Lord's work? That woman is on fire for Jesus today. And just so folks know,
very busy today.
Huh?
I said the Lord is very, very busy today. So am I right now. I'll be back.
Yep. Says she'll be back. So, code switching. I think that's, that the particular language code switching, I think I didn't hear that until like late 2013. I'd never heard of it. I remember hearing some folks say like, "Hey, I speak two languages, English and job interview." You know, like folks talking about like, you know, how they might flip it for that. Me, I think for myself as an individual, I think place to place, you just might lean more in one direction than the other. Because for me, it's too hard. Because at some point, like, you're gonna have to, like, if you make characters, you're gonna have to be the other character in front of people who don't even know that damn character exists. So, like, I just stay the hyper-leftist fucking blue-collar motherfucker at all times. I just stay that guy, and I don't change from it. You know, and not just hyper-leftist blue-collar, and then at the same time, a guy who, like, my biological mother was an English major, so you might hear a word or two come flying out my face that sounds like I had a mother who was an English major at the College of St. Elizabeth. Oh, excuse me. It's a coughing day on the wine cellar. I was eating those Boston baked beans, and now I have, like, little peanut crumblers lodged all in my shit. And I'm just coughing away here. And so that's how I talk. Like, I'm always gonna sound like a professor in the hood. Like, that's basically what I'm gonna sound like all the time. Like, if Cornel West was a Crip, that's me. That's how I talk all the time. And, I mean, I think more folks should just do that, right? Because, like, being those characters, it was funny at first, but, like, now it's corny when Barry Hussein does it, right? Like, did anybody catch that shit that Barry Hussein did where he, like, slow jammed the TPP on the Jimmy Fallon? Like, I think I heard a clip from it. Obama, Fallon, TPP, something like that. Oh, excuse me. And I think it was pretty recent. I don't know if it's on the YouTubes or what, but it was disgusting, man. Let's see. So he did that June 9th. That was back in June. And it's like when he now, this is one that I don't know if he knew the camera was there. I mean, I figure, you know, he probably always knows the camera's there. He's the fucking president. But, like, when he got the hot dog and he let him keep the change for a tip and we straight, you know, stuff like that. Or, like, when he was campaigning in 08 and he did the Jay-Z thing where he was like, people got all kind of stuff to say about you. But, you know, you just gotta. And then he, brushed his shoulder off like the Jay-Z song, Get That Dirt Off Your Shoulder. You know, like, here, check this shit out.
President Obama still has 8 months left in office before his second term is up. Naturally, this is the time to look back on all his accomplishments over the past 8 years. You know, I was going to make a joke about this, but I don't think it needs a joke. I think it needs to be slow jammed. You know what I'm talking about, Tariq?
Yeah, Jimmy. I think you're saying you like to slow jam this news.
That's right. I want to slow jam the news, and I'm not the only one.
Right, and the crowd bugs out because Barry Hussein walks out from behind the curtain so he could slow jam the news. Look at this shit. This slick motherfucker. Fucking Barry Hussein. All right, crowd's bugging out. Here they go. These motherfuckers.
It's been an honor and a privilege to serve as your president for over the past 8 years.
I made a gang of money, motherfuckers.
When I first took office, our nation was facing one of the worst recessions in its history. Since then, we've added more than 14 million new jobs.
Service sector jobs that don't pay shit.
Through the actions of my administration, we were able to stimulate the economy.
And we're able to deploy more troops as a way of getting out of war.
President Obama stimulated long-term growth. Both the public and the private sector.
All right, now notice, but you see now, so there's a penis joke from the Democrats, but if the Republicans do it, that buy it. Like, Democrats are just as tacky.
Candles and guns.
See, and then they got just cooning for Clinton. Cooning for Clinton.
Steps our country has taken in recent years, both socially and environmentally. The United States has been a leader in developing clean energy to ensure the health of our planet for future generations.
Bullshit! That's been Germany. That wasn't
you,
nigga. That was the Supreme Court, fool. That was states and the Supreme Court.
Face an important decision this fall. Work alongside other world leaders.
So now Jimmy Fallon and Obama are slow jamming the Trans-Pacific Partnership to you.
Jobs we provide here at home. It's that simple.
So what you're saying is,
yeah, you know me. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP.
Now hold on there, Fred Dispenser.
Uh-huh.
Are you saying you're down with TPP?
Down with TPP.
Yeah, you know me.
Uh-huh.
Look, Jimmy, the TPP allows American businesses to sell their products both at home and abroad.
Which businesses?
The more higher-paying jobs we provide here at home. It's that simple.
Niggas been selling shit abroad on eBay for years, fool. Obama is dirty.
Since you're here, I gotta ask. Have you been watching all the election coverage this week about Donald Trump?
Alright, that's that. That's the end of that. Yeah, that's that dirty scumbag shit. And Phoenix Kalita is waiting for a fellow Christian among her to finish their prayer session that they're doing together right now. That's just what they do. But yeah, so like, and you see what I'm talking about? It's tacky as fuck. Like, Barry Hussein is using the code switching to get poor ass black people on board with corporatist trade deals. Nigga, you realize it was called the transatlantic slave trade. Nigga, you here because of a trade deal, nigga. What the fuck, nigga? You are a product of a trade deal. I mean, nigga, you run around calling yourself Malik Shabazz or Ranaha King Owalaki all the fuck you want to, nigga. But there's a reason why your name is fucking Ongwell Cogglepot. Nigga, because you come from fucking ownership, nigga, from products, from a trade deal. Yeah, so code switching, fuck code switching. I get that, but like, I mean, fuck code switching for me. I don't want to do it. Alright, I don't want fucking debt. Alright, when I'm in the workplace, I'm gonna be like, yo, fuck that misogynoir shit, loke. Right? Like, yo, fuck that old little motherfucking buster ass hyper patriarchy, hyper masculine bullshit you putting on. Cause that's me. Cause I'm just being me. You know, and then the same, it's like, and I got a lot of sounds, I got a lot of voices. First off, I got a high pitched voice. You can do a lot with that. You can do a lot of shit when you have a naturally high pitched voice. You know, when I sound a bit like my biological mother from New Jersey. And then all her New York friends and her New Jersey friends, you know, that she hung out with in the military. And they come over and, you know, hang out and talk about the president. I'm pretty sure that's what I heard them talking about most of the time. I think they really just didn't like the president. And that was the transition from Bush to Clindo, you know. And then also, you know, my childhood being in Spanaway, Washington State, you know, I sound like Spanaway trash a lot. Like when people be like, oh yeah, you keep it real. Like my keep it real is more Spanaway, Washington, you know, in the suburbs than Hilltop in the hood. You know, like I learned in the hood. My adolescence was in the hood. But, like, when it comes to, like, standing on the front porch and saying, well, come on over here, kick your ass. Like, that's kind of me. Like, when I do this character here on the program and I'm like, I just want a couple of beers, man. Just, you know, just a couple of beers and some cold hot dogs. Dip them in cheese sauce. You know, like, that's a Spanaway guy. That's that guy that walks to the store to get one can of beer and drinks it on the way home just because he wanted to get out of the house. That's that guy. I know that guy. I grew up around that guy. Alright. And I don't switch. Cause I am that guy. I'm that guy and I'm this other guy over here. Alright. So maybe if Phoenix Kalita ever finishes with her obsession with prayer, she'll come back on the program. And but from there, what the hell do we got? We have WineCellarMedia.com. Police raid an Amish party in an Ohio field and arrest 73 people, white-on-white crime. Political news. I love this. Matter of fact, let's just dive right into it. First off, I love the fact that his name is Jolly. All right, that's his name. His name is Jolly. David, to be exact. All right, David Jolly. I also like that he's a Republican and he doesn't like that a fucking bill was blocked on some bullshit. And he's like, there's some Republican niggas out there that put in work. There's some Republican niggas that get down for the get down. And this nigga's name is Jolly David, to be exact. Republican. Just like who was it fighting for the to make the NFL and the MLB and all them niggas pay their taxes? That was a Republican that was like, y'all niggas gotta pay your taxes, son. Alright? Right, you know, it's easier to just watch MSNBC and let them scare you into silly-ass generalizations. So this nigga David Jolly, he doesn't fuck around. Matter of fact, let's find my man, so my man David Jolly, he went out on the House floor in Florida after a bill got shitted on, and he has some things to say. This is coming off of C-SPAN.
Service of your television provider.
Okay, C-SPAN. Yeah, I don't
created
need...
Created by cable.
Yeah, C-SPAN created by cable. All right, here comes
Thank David. You, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to talk about Zika. And I rise with about 100 mosquitoes straight from Florida. Aedes aegypti mosquitoes capable of carrying the Zika virus. This is the reason for the urgency. This is the reason for the fear. These mosquitoes can travel only about 150 feet, but through the assistance of a plane ticket and researchers at University of South Florida, they have made their way from Florida to the well of this house. Now, they are not active carriers, but they could be. See, University of South Florida is one of very few...
Yes, this nigga has like a jar of mosquitoes on the fucking house floor. He claims has Zika.
Research facilities capable of responding. Through the efforts and leadership of Dr. Robert Novak at the College of Global Health, his team of medical, public health, and research professionals, they lead an insectary to study control, containment, and medical and public health solutions to combat and eradicate and ultimately find a vaccine for Zika. But they can only do so with money. Mr. Speaker.
Oh, look, a Republican that wants to spend money. Does MSNBC tell you that that exists? Does Elon James White tell you that that exists? All right, does the black guy who tips tell you that that exists? Don't trust these Democrat niggas. All right, these fucking sellout ass corporatist motherfucking capitalist buster ass Democrat niggas. You can't trust them. They won't tell you that David Jolly exists and that he's a motherfucking fool out the 13th district of Florida.
It is time to act. The politics of Zika have gone on far too long. The politics of Zika are wrong. The president proposed a plan that was imperfect. It assumed a two-year crisis when, in fact, there might only be a one-year crisis. It expanded Medicaid for non-Zika-related health care. Why would we dilute Zika-related emergency funding with non-Zika-related health care? It proposed construction of capital properties on leased lands with no recapture provision. That was the president's plan. The Senate reached a bipartisan compromise of 1.1. The House had its own plan, and through the leadership of the appropriations chairman who traveled to study this issue, money has continued to flow, but we know that money will end. Mr. Speaker, people are scared. During the 7 weeks of August that we were gone, cases of Zika rose from 4,000 to, by some estimates, over 16,000.
And let's not forget the Zika virus is also transmitted sexually. Oh, we need to talk about that shit too.
In the country, including a new non-travel related case in Pinellas County, Florida, my home, my community. There are a million people roughly in that county who are scared, who have fear. In that fear, they are demanding action and they are seeing inaction. And in that inaction, they are angry. Angry! And they should be. It is not our job to try to explain to the American people why we know better. It is our job to respond to the fear and the anxiety and the anger of a population concerned about a pending public health crisis, concerned about mosquitoes. You see, I brought these mosquitoes here today to convey fear and that anxiety
to millions
of Americans and Floridians. Can you imagine, colleagues, the fear and anxiety in this chamber if these 100 mosquitoes were outside this jar, not inside this jar?
Oh.
Members of Congress would run down the hall to the physician's office to be tested. They would spray themselves before coming down here. This is the fear of Floridians right here. It is not good enough to work on a compromise for months and months and months with no solution. The time for politics of Zika is over.
It's over, son.
The politics of Zika are garbage right now. The fact that candidates are going to spend money on commercials about Zika instead of responding together in a bipartisan, bicameral way in a divided government to a public health crisis that Americans understand, we are wasting time. That is why I'm joined by these mosquitoes today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I yield back.
That's what I'm talking about. That's a wild dude. Like, yo, like, give me more of that guy. Whatever party. I don't give a shit, nigga. All right, the fucking gargoyle party. Whoever the fuck. Give me more of that wacky motherfucker that comes out there and essentially threatens chemical warfare over a vote. Nigga, gangster up, nigga. God damn it. I like it. He should have a skateboard strapped to his back and just be wearing a fucking horizontal striped t-shirt. I dig it, man. I fucking dig it. All right. So, doop-a-doop. Oh, shit. It looks like I was supposed to post this one in, under my post-racial category, but I ended up putting it in uncategorized. So, Erica Garner, she had words to say about Billy D. Blase, if you will. And they wasn't too friendly like. So it was Thursday yesterday. Because folks did not release disciplinary records on the cop that murdered Eric Garner. So Erica Garner, she was fairly blunt in what she had to say. So she went on the Twitter and tweeted at Billy D. Blase, Billy D. Pro Charter School Blase. She said, quote, "Just because you love black pussy don't mean you love black lives," end quote. It's like, that's about as true as it's gonna get. All right, and let's just jump to the end, because that's most of what it's about. And at the end, what they have is one of the things that was said, said she also brought up his son Dante, and quote, "The thing that kills me is that de Blasio is raising a black man. This is the example. My dad lays down and rolls over for white supremacy," end quote. And the last line of the article is, "The mayor declined to comment on the critical tweets." Yeah, he would decline on the critical tweets. I understand. Those tweets ain't nice to you, is they, Billy D. Blase, Blase Blase, with your Blase ass, nigga? All right, now, Zendaya Coleman? Apparently this is some sort of popular culture, Zendaya Coleman. She ran up on $400 of Misogynoir, and we'll get to this, and then we'll get to a break with Prison Radio. So, and this, I guess she posted this on
Snapchat? I don't know what these things are. I don't know who Zendaya Coleman is. I just know that she black, I'm black, let's be black. And you know, somebody came at her sideways over 400 little funky ass dollars. Like, even if you're not rich, if some shit costs $400 as a cashier, assume the person might be able to fucking pay for it. Hell, assume the person came in the store with currency that they intended on exchanging for goods and or services. Right, right. So this is Zendaya Coleman on Snapchat talking about her experience.
So we just got these bonds. Now I'm trying to buy a lot of...
Whoa, yes? Phoenix Coleman?
Yes, Zendaya is an... Yes, she is an actress, and she's actually faced misogyny before. She's the one who had dreads at a celebrity event and got made fun of for smelling like patchouli. Yeah.
Oh, see, and also,
and
see,
she's the one who's getting the...
Yeah, what up?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and she's also getting the backlash because she was cast as Mary Jane in the Spider-Man reboot, and people are mad Mary Jane isn't white and flipping their shit about it.
Okay. Now, you said they said she smells like patchouli, which, to my knowledge, black people don't even use that shit.
Yeah, I always thought that was a white hippie thing. But,
yeah.
Know,
so now my brain says, you know what? It's a reminder. It's like, because white supremacy is, you know, a conservative ideal. It's something that has been conserved as it is intended to be conserved. And the conservative mind projects, right? Even if you don't consider yourself a conservative politically, legislatively, idealistically, if you got some white supremacy in your system, that's your conservatism right there. And the the conservative mind projected and said, huh, them's dreadlocks must be using patchouli oil. It's like, nah, white nigger. No, white nigger, no. Our shit is real. These are actual dreadlocks, not organized clumps, okay?
Are they even organized, really?
On some. You know, like one individual I used to interact with had organized clumps. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and she'd put, like, toys in them and shit or whatever.
Yeah,
the
whole thing. Yeah, the whole thing was just to imply she was dirty and didn't have good hygiene and was gross and lazy and, you know, all the typical stereotypes.
Yeah. Still projecting. let's see. So this is Zendaya Coleman on Snapchat talking about it.
Gift cards. Now, there's some certain specific things you have to do when it comes to buying gift cards. There's some certain limits and some things, which is understandable. Okay, cool. So I'll take a less amount, whatever. But the lady that was helping us, I don't think she was a huge fan of our skin tone.
Not at all.
Not at all.
She was rude.
Extremely. In fact, I recall her not trying to help us at all, saying that we couldn't buy the gift cards.
Exactly.
And then throwing my wallet.
Threw your wallet?
Can't make this shit up. I just can't make this shit up.
Not at all.
You know?
Mad disrespect.
This is what we deal with.
Because we're black.
She literally...
She threw your wallet. That...
And she was like, you can't afford this, is how she looked at me.
Basically.
Girl, it was $400.
She's making Negro faces that are funny.
There's so much progress to be done in our world.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like a throw. It was like a toss. She like tossed it with my card still loose. And my cards were loose, so like my card fell on the scanner and she was about to keep scanning the next person.
Yeah!
I was like, that's my card! Like, what are you doing? You know what? It's all love. You know, may she go on to have a wonderful life.
Now, after that got uploaded, a spokesperson for VONS, Vons, the store in question, released a statement on the matter, and they said,
At Vons, we strive to treat each other, each and every customer, with the utmost respect. There is a policy that limits gift card purchases using a credit card. Zendaya was able to purchase gift cards up to our limit, and we apologize for any inconvenience or misunderstanding. We respect Zendaya's voice in the community and similarly are committed to diversity and inclusion. Moreover, we understand that race is a sensitive issue in America and view this experience as a reminder that every interaction is an opportunity to teach each customer as we ourselves, treat each customer as we ourselves would like to be treated. End quote.
Wow.
And as I say, so as far as whoever these Vons niggas are, don't boycott, boy quit. Never go back again. Just never go back. Silently. Silently boy quit these motherfuckers. Mmm-kay. Mmm-kay. Nigga, nigga. All right. Now, one more. One more, and then we'll break out with Mumia Abu-Jamal. Oh, excuse me. And you know what? Reminder, the old Triggerino, trigger warning. Trigger this, trigger that, trigger niggas in black. All right. So a Colorado sheriff is arrested for how he served and protected this woman. He's facing life in prison. Hey, you could tell he's a good... I mean, I put up a picture of him. He got a smile on his face. Him a white man. White men that smile and wear police uniforms are inherently good people. He's standing in front of an American flag.
Wow.
Colorado got marijuana. They're progressive. And he's in Colorado, so he's progressive. What?
Yeah.
Alright, here we go. He's facing life in prison after he was arrested for raping a developmentally disabled woman in his home, then threatening her with life in prison if she told anyone. Let's keep going. Sedgwick County Sheriff Thomas Hanna even gave the woman $60. He also threw in an extra $20 in her commissary after transporting her to jail, telling her he has a big heart and wanted to make sure she could call her brother.
Wait, she was already an inmate?
Yeah. But he was also sure to tell her to keep her mouth shut about the rape that is said to have taken place August 10th. Quote, "This has to stay between us. If it don't, I'm gonna take you to prison for the rest of your life." End quote. All right. Now, this is from the Denver Post, because one of his own deputies that works under him said some funny style shit cracking off here. So this is from the Denver Post. The allegations against Hanna came to the attention of prosecutors and state investigators after one of Hanna's deputies raised concerns about his interaction with the woman, the affidavit says. Specifically, the deputy said he found it odd that Hanna was transporting the woman to jail in his personal vehicle, which is against department policy. The deputy said he became more worried when he saw Hanna's personal truck parked outside the sheriff's home shortly after Hanna left to take the woman to jail. The department says Hannah's vehicle was parked outside the home for at least 20 to 30 minutes, according to the affidavit. Hanna was moved to the Weld County Jail, where he is being held after his arrest on Tuesday, end quote, from the Denver Post. Alright, so we'll see where this goes. Because remember, he's facing trial.
And he's a white man in a police uniform, and he's smiling. All right. So, probably a good guy? Probably a nice guy?
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, what do we always say in the wine cellar?
Yes.
Most rapists are repeat offenders, so...
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're coming forward now.
This guy has a trail of rape. They all do. All right. So let's go ahead and break out with Mumia Abu-Jamal on a little bit of medical apartheid with what him and other people are facing in prison with this hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system. Victim number one got gun. Now it's time for victim number two. Shots from the 50 caliber Desert Eagle. Fuck you. And they started the static.
Father Teresa's wine cellar is rated R for keeping it real. Snitching, rat heads get nothing but Jesus, my bruh, legit. So fuck them and feed them, cause I don't need them. Call up Daytona with them bullies and decapitate them. Cause nigga, that's how we roll in the nine motherfucking.
My friends, my brothers, my sisters, I thank you for joining us today. We're here about a medical injustice. Recently, the court, in our case against the DOC and medical treatment, found that the DOC and the company that they contract to provide medical services were not doing what is needed, that is treating patients. And, in the words of the judge, they use deliberate indifference to people's medical needs. And they did so, he said, based upon fiscal, not medical concerns. We took one step. We are moving forward. But this is not just about myself. There are over 6,000, according to the DOC's numbers, men and women who are infected with hepatitis C and are not being treated. Under the DOC's so-called protocol, which was revealed in our hearing here in Scranton, the DOC essentially let people almost die. They had to be bleeding from their esophagus to be considered for treatment. That was deliberate indifference to medical needs. It created needless suffering, and it is unconstitutional. So we're building a movement, and we need to be moving, and we need to remember the words of our beloved, honorable ancestor, Frederick Douglass, who said, power concedes nothing without demand. We've got to demand this fair and better treatment for thousands of men and women who are held captive in the DOC. I thank you for what you have done. Let us move forward. On the move, long live John Africa, let us win. From Imprisoned Nation, this is your brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
There we go. All right, good. All right, back in the Martha Frackin' Schmarkin' Floggle Wine Cellar. Phoenix Kalita, are you back on the job? I don't know where Miss Phoenix Colored might be. She could be doing something black. She could be doing something dark. She could be doing something very Negro-centric. All right, so, white-on-white crime. Police raid an Amish party. To my knowledge, Amish people are really orthodox white people, right? It's like they are, like, very fundamentally white. Like, to a point, like, they taken the weirdness on another level. And it is white-on-white crime, and they don't fit respectability politics. They need to respect themselves. That's why I chose the image that I chose, because they're not being respectable. Like, if you go to winecellarmedia.com and you see the image for the post, it's a couple of Amish lads looking fairly excited, and a assumed cis Amish woman bent over with writing on her hind end, and it says, Amish men, do it with a hoe. And that's on some sort of sticker on her hind end there. And So authorities in the heart of Ohio's Amish country say they arrested more than 70 people. Looks like it came out to 73. And this was in a raid at a weekend party in a field that was expected to attract hundreds of Amish youth. Because apparently, like, what they do is they're raised Orthodox white, and then, like, they turn 18 or 21 or something, and their parents are like, alright, go bug out for a while, and you could decide if you want to fucking bug out, wild out for the rest of your life, or if you want to chill, you know, and come back and, you know, like, fucking make butter or cheese or whatever the fuck they do in their little neighborhoods. And, so more than 40 police officers converged Saturday on the Hardy Township field after concerned parents notified the Holmes County Sheriff's Office of a large party expected to attract over 1,000 Amish from Ohio and neighboring states. Investigators say that 73, including 35 juveniles, were the folks taken into custody and charged with underage consumption of alcohol. The Daily Record of Worcester, that's the name of a town out there, Worcester. Worcester. The Daily Record of Worcester reports that some also face charges of resisting arrest, somehow managed to not get choked to death in those instances, and two were taken to a hospital for alcohol-related illness. The Amish are a Christian sect whose members live a simple lifestyle and shun modern conveniences. Okay, so again, or really, just really Orthodox white people. All right. Orthodox dudes, if you will. They are very dudish. All right. Papa doop boop, bishkeet, papa doo. WineCellarMedia.com. This is under social issues and post-racial and entertainment, because it kind of crosses those sections. There's a white woman, and she made a gesture of solidarity, and her organization tried to hide it, because this here white woman tried to do what I might consider to be the right thing. So, you got that fool, the light-skinned homie, Colin Kaepernick? You got Colin Cappy. So you got the homeboy Colin Cappy protesting against racial injustice in the U.S. And it appears to be slowly spreading with soccer international person Megan Rapinoe kneeling during a national anthem before Seattle Reigns NWSL game against Chicago Red Stars on Sunday. The U.S. soccer star and Seattle Reign midfielder Megan Rapinoe was prevented by the opposing team, the Washington Spirit, Wednesday night after kneeling during the national anthem after the Spirit altered its pregame ceremonies. See, so what she wanted to do, she wanted to get her kneeling deal going on, like while the cameras were rolling, and like would catch it. And they were like, no, you gonna be a nigger lover and we gonna stop it. So they changed their pregame ceremonies. And the Spirit, they released a statement prior to the match saying they would rather move up the anthem while the teams were off the field than subject our fans and friends to the disrespect we feel such an act would represent. Disrespecting who and how. This is what they can they cannot clearly articulate. And the reason why is really because it isn't disrespecting anybody. Alright? If anything, it's the anthem is disrespectful. America is disrespectful. Your flag is disrespectful. All right, they continue with their quote, "We decided to play the anthem in our stadium ahead of schedule rather than subject our fans and friends to the disrespect of blah, 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 blah. We understand this may be seen as an extraordinary step, but believe it was the best option to avoid taking focus away from the game on such an important night for our franchise. To willingly allow anyone to hijack this tradition, that means so much to millions of Americans and so many of our own fans. For any cause would effectively be just as disrespectful as doing it ourselves." I like how they say any cause, because they realize that if they say for niggers getting murdered by cops, like, they can't say that. They know better. They know they're in the wrong. That's the thing about injustice. The person practicing injustice knows it's not just. All right? Don't let them lie to you. They know they wronged in a motherfucker. Heather Lynn Sebra is a, what I would call a Clintonian supremacist that uses her white womanhood as a, shield to attack black boys. This is in, under Becky Lives Matter on WineCellarMedia.com. There's a video, and it shows, several punches thrown inside a Northumberland High School, where the, physical altercation is broken up. Nicole Thomas said that the video shows her son, John, in a fight. And I'm not playing the video because it's a podcast. Also because there's no relevant audio in there. And it shows John and a teammate walk towards each other and physically engage before the other boy slams John to the ground. And then a white woman comes up. They're both fighting. White woman comes up, grabs the black boy and slaps him in the face. And she gets away with it because she's a white woman and he is one of Hillary Clinton's super predators. The mother of the young lad said, "How dare you? For this woman to restrain my son by holding him by the t-shirt and sticking her finger in his face after slapping him, then chastising him for something that he repeatedly said he didn't say, how dare you? To abuse, berate, belittle, intimidate, and physically attack someone is disgusting. I think it needs to be addressed, and I think people need to be punished for it and held accountable." So, and she won't be punished, she won't be held accountable. Her name is Heather Lynn Sebra. And she is a white supremacist. And if you are a black male, if you're a black anybody, especially black males, stay away from Heather Lynn Sebra. She will get you lynched. You will die. She will have you murdered. All right? So stay the fuck away from her. All right. Now, I think I want to go ooba-doop, shkeeba-doop, bop-a-doo. Everybody knows you're a Jew. Go and check out. Ooh, I'm getting a whole bunch of gosh darn notifications. And I want to take a look at, these are not on WineCellarMedia.com yet, but, Phoenix Kalita was, hitting me with, some links, if you will. So I want to, take a look at those. And I want to take a look at these notifications because there might be comments on the program tonight. Oh, okay, that's Pamma Loco saying she's at work right now. All right, not Pamma Loco, but Pam Loco. Those are two different folks. Pamma Loco is white, and I don't know her age. Pam Loco is a black woman with a wicked afro, and I think she's like 30. Yeah, I think she's about 30. I don't know enough about the inmates rioting in prison. Phoenix Kalita linked me to that. And shocking photos of adults who overdosed a boy with a car. Overdosed with boy in a car. I can't use photos on the podcast. I think I might have to cut this episode off. All right. So, swing it back, bring it back just like this. Code switching. not for me. Maybe for you, it might work for you. It's not my deal. I just talk how I talk. I riff how I riff. I got a lot of voices in me. You know, I got a high-pitched voice. I sound funny anyway. And I like to bug out, right? And so let that be your wine cellar. WineCellarMedia.com, Patreon.com/WineCellarMediaFund, and PayPal.me/PhoenixAndWilhelm. Nah, not Wilhelm, but William. PayPal.me/PhoenixAndWilliam. And got to check out Rashani Loco with Single Simulcast. Ricky Loco needs to get back on Americans United again. Nigga, it's an election year, and you have a political show. Get your political show on. And get that shit all cracking. All right, have a good one.